From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's take a trip to the beach. Easy to do from my studio here in the Great Plains. Nevertheless, I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, as they do each week, two people who never have sand in their swim trunks, language experts and New York Times bestselling authors Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Well, school is starting in a lot of places, or will be very, very soon. So it's probably time for us to wave goodbye to the summer, at least goodbye to the vacation part of summer. The heat is still around. Kathy Petras, you are there in Armilla, Spain. I assume it's still quite warm.
Well, we were down to the high 90s today. Woo! Uh-huh. We were like, yes, cool down, 98.
Yay. Ross Petras, at your home in Toronto, what is it, like mid-60s or something there?
No, well, I mean, we are a little bit warmer than that, Fletcher. No, it's about 75 or 80.
Oh, nice. Gosh, okay.
Oh, my God. You must be wearing a Speedo, Ross.
Well, since we are saying goodbye to the summer, one last gasp, I suppose, before we all head back to school. And so we're going to talk today about some summer words, some beach words and phrases.
Yeah, Fletcher, that's sort of what we were talking about. I went to the beach, actually, not a ocean beach, but I was at the beach in Niagara on the lake on Lake Ontario. And we were talking because Kathy and I, when we were kids, we'd go every year, we'd go to Savannah, Georgia, Tybee Island Beach, which was just a wonderful beach.
Oh, it's
wonderful.
Amazing. Really,
but it got us, actually, it's very apropos of the timing, too, because we would go usually in mid to late August. And Savannah, just like a lot of schools in the South and the West, starts school early. And I would get so annoyed at seeing all the ads back to school. I want to forget about school. I want to enjoy my beach
vacation. Do you remember, Ross? I remember lying at the beach and I'd try to remember. Did I still remember my multiplication tables? And I would be like, quick. Can I still multiply that?
Oh, yeah, the panic of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you knew they were all already suffering. We still had a little time. But you felt the cold breath of school down the back of your neck.
You bet. But it was still very hot. Very, very hot in Savannah. But even the water was sort of warm, as I remember that, Kath. But it was still wonderful.
Yeah, it was much more it was much more like a bath than like the Atlantic up by us. Mm-hmm. Jersey Shore and Montauk and stuff.
Yeah. But anyway, we got to wondering about a lot of words. And what really fascinated both of us were people who claim to love the beach and claim to love all things beachy, we had like very little, and we love words as well, but we had very little knowledge of beach words. Completely.
We were very stupid.
Yes.
Let's just put it that way.
Still are.
We were very ignorant. Very ignorant.
Well, I have a feeling that we may have a little quiz coming up. And if there's one thing that I know, it's the beach, being here in Kansas.
That occurred to us, Fletcher.
We were talking about you, Fletcher. We said, given your Kansas background, which screams knowledge of all things beach related.
That's right.
We thought this was particularly apropos. But anyway, one interesting thing, too. I mean, Kath, why don't we start with beach for that matter?
Okay, we're going to start with the most basic, beach. Where do you think it came from? I'll give you a hint. It comes from a proto-Germanic word that seems to have something to do with water.
Okay. I was going to say something Germanic because I know, you know, like in Spanish, the word is playa, and in French, the word is plage. And so I didn't really feel like it was coming from somewhere over there. It felt more Germanic. So I would have gotten that part right, kind of. I mean, the proto. Regardless, what does it have anything to do with? What about a narrow strip of land near the water?
Aha! You're so close. It's uncanny. You're not.
That's a good.
You're not at all close.
Yeah, that's a callback to the last episode and the one before that and the one before that, because apparently we keep talking about narrow strips of land. Something related to the water. I mean, we only know it as, you know, the edge of the water or the edge of the land going into the water.
That's actually, though, that you're on the right track with that, because I would have thought of beach more watery. It actually initially meant the loose pebbles of like the shingle.
Okay.
Yeah, and that was from the 1500s.
That kind of makes sense.
So it was
to
like the pebbly. First, it was the pebbles themselves. Then it was the pebbly shores. And then it became just like the thing that we call the beach.
But earlier on, from the original root, it means flowing water. And
oh,
so
really?
It's more really, it's more stream related, actually, than it is. I mean, I when you say beach, even though you can have a lake beach or whatever, I instinctively think of a seashore beach.
No, it's funny, Ross, when you made that distinction about being at Lake Ontario or whatever, because I'm with you. It's like, I know that's technically a beach, mm-hmm. but to me, that's like a lake berm or
yeah,
something.
I know. I know. Actually, it's interesting because we're all right now not on the beach, but we can all be talking.
That's true. I can get there very quickly.
But this one, Fletcher, really flipped me out. As a kid, I used to like to go fishing and I used to look at tides. And I did not know this until several days ago. And we're going to use your Kansas background. Can you tell us what a spring tide is?
A spring tide? I mean, I've heard that term maybe a little bit, but mm-hmm. it seems like just it's like related to the scent on a fabric softener or something.
You're thinking of Febreze. That's right. Another word we have here.
I don't know, Tide may have their own little.
Well, it's okay. So no, I mean, obviously, I don't know the answer, but is this related to the season spring, or is it related to like spring a water spring?
Fletcher, you're an etymological genius. It is the latter. Uh-huh. You're right. I always thought spring tide, when they said spring tide, they meant a tide in the spring. And mm-hmm. somehow with my genius, we were in Savannah, let's say maybe a little bit early in June, and they said spring tide. I thought, well, I guess spring tides came late this year. It has nothing to do with spring at all. It's the concept of the tide springing forth, which you said completely correctly, and occurs twice each lunar month without regard to the season. And it's when basically the moon and the sun are aligned, and so the tide is a lot higher and a lot lower than normal.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I must say, that one got me too, because I assumed, well, actually, it was unlike you, when I was a kid and they said spring tide, I was like, whatever.
Yeah,
I was just trying to, okay.
Who cares?
It's spring tide, June, July, I don't know. But I must say, I would have assumed spring as the season as opposed to a thing that happens to the tide. Okay, next now, we've got neap tide, which is one of my favorite words from crossword puzzles. Neap.
Yeah.
N-E-A-P.
Yeah.
It's a wonderful word for that. Yeah.
Neap tide. This is funny because back in high school, I was in, you know, like a quiz bowl team or something, and I remember memorizing things like different words for tides. Why would I do that when I was going to high school in Kansas? Why would I assume that they would have questions about neap tide and ebb tide? But anyway, is the neap tide the one that is higher? Like it's the higher tide, the one coming in? Or is it the other way around? Okay.
The buzzer goes, no, nothing at all. It is basically when it's the first and third quarters of the moon's regular cycle, and it's a more moderate high and low tide.
Yeah.
I got to interject. This is when I go crazy, because this is why I don't like all this stuff. It's too much like the first and the third.
I know.
And the second,
I agree
and
with
the
you,
eighth,
Kat.
And I just always go, oh, whatever. You know?
But it's good. But if you're going to go beachcombing, it's good to know that like if it's a neap tide, you're going to go, well, the low tide's not going to be that low this time. I think it's useful in that sense. Just out of curiosity, that we said NEAP. There is a word in English, chiefly dialectical, NEEP. I'm not sure that's in most Scrabble games, but do you know what it means?
Is it a snack? It sounds like a snack.
Well, if you like turnips as a snack, you got it.
I love turnips, actually.
Well, there you go. Have a neep in Scotland. It's a turnip.
It sounded snacky.
It does.
Okay, we're doing another tide here. Fletcher, we're on a roller. No, that's a wave, so never mind. Ebb tide.
Yeah. Okay. So I think the ebb tide is the lower tide, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I guess that's why I thought the neap tide was like the higher tide, but it is kind of, the neap tide is kind of higher, right? At least compared to the ebb tide.
Although a neap tide would have a lower, the ebb tide with a neap tide would be a lower, higher. Yes, you're right.
Okay. The ebb tide.
Ebb is basically it's reverse flow. The flow is going out back to sea.
Okay, okay.
Coming in is called flood.
When it's a neap, I'm trying to understand my neap now still. Not the turnip one, the other, the A. Now, when the neap tide happens, it's a moderate.
Yes.
High tide's lower and the low tide's higher.
Right. That's what we're
saying. It's kind of more like central. It's like it's a modifying tide.
Yeah, well, right? it's the sun and the moon are at right angles.
Okay, so I'm getting tired of this already.
I know, that's what happens.
It gets
but they're at right angles, so therefore it's not pulling. If you have like the sun and the moon all pulling, the tide goes higher and lower. But if it's like sort of working against each other a little bit, it's not as strong of an effect.
I feel like maybe we should have invited either a surfer or like a 17th century sailor onto the show to talk to us.
Okay, Ross will be the surfer off the 17th century sailor.
What's really interesting, though, is the three of us, all of us right now, have very little doings with tide. I'm in inland. Kathy would be on the, even if she goes to the beach, she'd be going to the Mediterranean, which doesn't have as many tides.
Which I love.
Kansas wheat fields or corn fields don't have too many tides from what I've heard either. So anyway.
Wheat surfing, Ross. Are you kidding? Haven't you heard of that?
But we'll go quickly into waves just for 2 seconds. I didn't know this either. What's a roller, Fletcher? It's a certain type of wave.
Oh, a roller. It's the kind that just keeps on going. Those waves that they just keep rolling up.
Actually, no, because there's another one that is caught more like that.
Okay.
I didn't know these either. Roller is a big wave that slowly gets smaller as it comes towards the shore.
Oh, that's the opposite of what I expected.
Yes.
Okay.
Me too. I would think of a roller as being this like big sort of like broom, broom, broom.
But anyway, let's quickly go through the rest. We also have breaker, which obviously you know.
No, what is it? Please tell me.
We have comber. Do you know comber?
He needed to know breaker.
No, I really do. That wasn't a joke.
Breaker. Oh, yeah, you really didn't?
That wasn't a joke. Yeah, I don't know what a breaker is.
Oh, that's interesting.
Ross, we're talking to someone from Kansas. Will you? Come on.
Growing up on the Atlantic Ocean, breakers all the time. It's a heavy sea wave that breaks into a white foam on the shore.
Okay.
And then there's the comber, which is more like what you thought of as the roller. A comber is this curling wave that sort of like goes roly-roly.
Yeah, okay.
Like a hair curl. I love those.
I love that.
We're talking about roller breaker comber. What we loved is lexicographers in the 17th century went insane about naming waves. And there was this one guy, two guys, but they had, what is that? How do you pronounce that? Undissonant and fluct. Fluctuosonant, Ross?
Sonant, how would you pronounce? I think it would be.
Fluctuosonant?
I think so. These were basically 16th century, 17th century words that were all talking about waves. We couldn't really get it. Latin.
And they went a little nuts.
They did. Fluctuavagant, which is to float in the waves.
Be tossed by waves.
Yes. Fluctuavagus, to be wandering in the waves. Fluctuferous. Producing waves, etc. We don't quite know why they were doing this, but maybe they were all at sea or something. I don't know.
I don't know. It kind of intrigued me, though. But this makes a great place to surfing.
Which is weird. This one really got us wet. How old do you think the word surfing is, Fletcher?
Surf. Are you asking how old is it in the context in which we know it? I mean, I feel like...
As in riding
surfing.
Waves?
Yeah, riding the wave.
19th century.
No.
Not bad, though.
It isn't. We got the 1917 was the word to surf, which was really interesting to us because we thought it would be earlier. And then we found an earlier book, Life in the Sandwich Islands, which used to be called Hawaii, and the guy mentions it. But he says the sport, it was talking about the sport of riding the surf, which is very different from surfing. He didn't use that word. So we thought it was interesting to see that.
Although surfboard, though, is older, which is so weird.
Wait, what?
Surfboard, the word surfboard, is from 1826.
Yeah, but he called, and it's so weird, but he called the surfers, this guy did in 1851, surf players, which I sort of like, you know?
Surf players, yeah.
That makes sense, actually.
And speaking of playing in the surf, when did surf music come into being as well? Yeah.
That is not a trick question.
Surf music, like as we know it now, like Dick Dale?
Yeah.
I want to say like the 1950s, so let's say like the 1930s.
No, let's say 1963 is the first usage 63. Of surfing music.
Really?
Isn't that weird? But, you know, again, yeah, we can't really be sure of that. That's the first printed thing that we found on it.
Yeah.
But you don't know.
Yeah. Yeah, it's always, that's the problem with all this stuff, though, because, I mean, so much is used in language that's not printed or not collected. Nowadays, with the internet, it's a lot easier. I mean, I think it will be from here on in, but.
Okay, let's take a bikini break. This is going to be interesting.
Now, this is one where Ross and I noticed a distinct difference. As someone who was always liked fashion, he was fascinated by a lot of these terms. And I was like, well, yeah.
Yeah, I had the same thing with my wife.
It was definitely a dichotomy going on.
I know.
Yeah.
But this was really interesting, Fletcher, because like, obviously, or maybe not obviously, do you know the origin of the word bikini?
I know about bikini atoll.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Which reminds me, I used to watch a cartoon when I was a kid, Beanie and Cecil. Do you know Beanie and Cecil?
Oh, yeah, mm-hmm. Of course.
Yeah, there was a part where they went to no bikini atoll.
Ooh.
I didn't get it as a kid, that how many puns
I know,
were
it's
there.
Always interesting.
You know, that and Rocky and Bullwinkle and all that stuff, forget about it.
Yeah.
But bikini is interesting. So the bi in bikini, does it mean two or not, Fletcher?
I assumed it came from bikini atoll, and so
it does.
Yeah,
so,
it does.
So the
yeah.
bi wouldn't necessarily mean
right.
two, even though it's a two-piece suit, right?
And it does. You're completely correct. It actually comes from the name of the island, which in the language there is Pikini, and the P-I-K or B-I-K part actually means coconut tree, interestingly enough. Hmm. Mm-hmm. So you have coconut tree kini. So it doesn't mean that. But the interesting thing to us is that the bi, and we were talking about back formations, the bi is treated as if it means two in English.
Yeah, because we hear about things like tankinis and stuff, right?
Right, exactly.
And monokinis.
It's sort of like the same thing with we're talking, I think, did we talk about hamburger? And burger now means something.
Yeah, we did. Didn't we talked about cranberry morphemes.
Right, and we have cheeseburger and all that, and burger doesn't really mean anything, or at least it didn't originally, but now it does. And that's one linguistic concept that fascinates us, is that it's a productive construction. Take off the bi and you got, like you said, microkini, trikini, bandokini, skirtkini, tankini, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
I think also in this case, it works really well because kini is fun to work with. I'm not kidding.
Yeah.
I'm just saying how it sounds. You know what I mean? It's like, I think having tankini sounds fabulous. Having just like a two-piece tank suit with a flowing top doesn't.
No, you know? I agree. I completely agree.
But I want to move on. This one, speaking of tank suits, we just said, oh, you want to do Mayo first, Rose?
Yeah, do that, because I'm interested in Mayo. I didn't know, Fletcher, do you know the word Mayo?
Mayo.
M-A-I-L-L-O-T. You probably wouldn't, though, because it's not really used that much in American fashion.
But everyone I talked to, Sly knew it, you knew it, I didn't know it. But like everyone I talked to knew it. It was really weird.
Who else, though, did you talk to? Because women of a certain age would know.
Yeah, I guess
it was
so.
Huge
Pam
in vogue.
Too. Same thing. I
in
think
the
you're
80s.
Right.
Huge.
Is that what it was? Is that what it was?
Oh, yeah.
Well, so what is this?
It's just like basically a regular swimsuit.
Tank suit. It's a one-piece bathing. Oh, I'm sorry, Ross. You said swimsuit. I say bathing suit. We should have looked that up. I'm curious. Do you know? I never think swimsuit.
I always say bathing suit. What do you say, Fletcher?
Usually swimsuit. I don't know if I say, let me see, go get your bathing suit. I'd probably say
bathing
swimsuit.
Bathing suit. I say bathing suit.
I say bathing suit, too. I'm wondering if it could have also been mom, Ross, because we say a lot of things that were mom.
I think I'd say swimsuit. Know? Yeah, I think I'd generally say swimsuit.
Okay, they say that bathing suits are, I'm just looking online right now, that a swimsuit you can swim in, a bathing suit you could just sunbathe or casual water play, <It's> like, which is a term I never want to hear again.
Listen, yeah, I agree with you, but I have another question for you, Fletcher, now, though. So we're talking about swimsuits or bathing suits. Why are men's bathing suits called swimming trunks?
Trunks, yeah.
I love that.
Do we have any other kinds of trunks? Not really. Why?
They're elephants with trunks.
Well, yeah, sure. We've got elephants and we've got trunks that we store things in.
Well, we have elephant trunks, but you also have a trunk. You have a trunk, too. I do, too.
Yeah, that's true.
And in the old, it came from an old time when men's swimwear consisted of a long, loose garment that went all the way up. It covered your trunk.
Hmm. So it's a swimming trunk.
Now we
trunk.
Lost the trunk.
Put on your swimming trunk.
Yes. And you, because I mean, you see those old pictures of the guys in the 1900s with those, you know. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And they were made of wool, usually.
Which is horrible. Although, actually, wool's probably okay. It probably loses water pretty quickly, though.
I don't know.
So we kept the word, but the style of it changed so much that now
you
it's
bet.
Just some shorts.
It just seems like, because it's not at your trunk at all. It's from your waist and below.
Right.
But you do call them swim trunks. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you say trunks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Instead of trunk, right?
Yeah. You say, oh, get your trunks.
Yeah.
Well, it's like trousers.
Yeah.
I always assumed that was because of two legs, like trousers, pants, trunks, no?
Yeah, maybe. It's just interesting, you know, if it was related to your actual trunk to begin with, then presumably that
it would have been
called
just a swimming trunk.
Yeah. But somehow it's turned into trunks.
Well, I would assume, though, like I said, that's just... It's just following the pants,
trousers,
pantalones, right. If you will, pattern.
Right.
Then there's board shorts, which is going back to surfing.
Yeah. What's the difference between board shorts and swimming trunks? Just the style?
Board shorts are longer and baggier.
Yeah.
And they usually tie. They were for surfing. It was like the surfing thing. And then they also call them baggies. I mean, like baggies. You put on your baggies. Getting your woody... Drive to the beach with your baggies. I don't know why I'm like living this new California 60s surf person persona, which I have nothing to do with.
But it's also interesting. We had another word here, which I didn't realize came sort of, we're talking about back formations or things that, you know, used to mean this and they don't mean that now. And tank tops, which are the, you know, what a tank top is, a collarless shirt with.
I'm wearing one.
And we didn't know this, but that came from swimming suit. And it's really interesting. The idea of tank, as in tank top, came from something called tank suits. Because swimming pools used to be called tanks in England, which I thought was really interesting.
Oh.
And then from there, tank top, the sleeveless, collarless shirt evolved. The word evolved to mean something else, which I thought was really interesting.
I want to hurry up now. And make sure we're talking about bikinis, but I think we've got to talk about the male body now and Speedos.
Yes. Uh-huh. Okay, do you know where that, you know, Speedos came into being, Fletcher?
I mean, I just assumed it was the brand name. I've never assumed anything else. Yeah.
It's Australian and, it actually came from a Scots guy. We have a lot of Scottish in English, which always fascinates me. It was from the Australian Army needing socks, and he expanded his company and started swimwear called a racer bag. But I love this, Russ. You have to read this. They held a naming contest.
I know, I love this.
For their line of swimwear, which were trunks, small trunks, I might add.
A man called Captain Parsonson won £5 for his slogan. You had to do a slogan, and he had Speed On in Your Speedos. And from them, the brand name was born.
Wow.
And that's like an old-fashioned phrase. I mean, to me, it's very old-fashioned. Speed on in your Speedos. It really sort of reeks of like 1920s to me.
I had no idea that, I mean, I guess I've never really thought about where Speedo came from, like the word.
No, nor I.
Fletcher, we're going to end up now with a couple of idioms that relate to the summer, and this is going to be a standard Fletcher quiz. So are you ready?
Yes.
This is my favorite, sweating like a pig. Now, you know what that is. I think you always say I'm sweating like a pig, Kathy. Maybe that's why I like it.
I do. I say it a lot. I sweat a lot. I'm a Greek woman.
I know. It's very evocative. Okay, so we know what it means. It means to be very hot and to sweat. Mm-hmm. So does it come, Fletcher, from A... literally a hot pig sweating in the summer heat, and it's a modern version from the Anglo-Saxon, hog swat, from pig iron smelting, from the old greased pig contest in the medieval and early European times, when people would compete to catch a pig in oil or butter. In other words, a slimy, sweating pig.
If I'm not mistaken, pigs actually do sweat. I think... they're one of the few other animals, maybe besides human beings, who actually sweat. At least that's what I've always heard. Maybe it's just because people say sweating like a pig. But I've also always thought it was just kind of rude because, I don't know, I'm a little partial to pigs, but Regardless, I think it really is just sweating like an actual pig, the first
well,
one.
Fletcher, you failed biology and etymology in this case.
So pigs
actually,
don't sweat.
I looked it up. Pigs have far, far fewer sweat glands than humans
do. You have maligned our pig friends.
Pigs do not sweat very much at all.
Well, I feel terrible because I really do like pigs quite a lot.
I do too, and I think we can even be happier with them because they're not going to be smelly.
No, but it came from, and I thought this was fascinating, and I did vaguely remember this, Ross. I forget when. It must have been in high school or something. I learned this. It comes from pig iron smelting. Smelting is a thing you don't think often of. I don't know about you guys, but it comes from the iron smelting process. When the iron cools, the surrounding air reaches its dew point. This is all off the top of my head from my knowledge of smelting. And the beads of moisture, mm-hmm. form on the surface of the pig, which is the iron thing there. So when you sweat like a pig, the pig is cooled enough that you can touch it.
Yeah. So we're not actually talking about a real pig at all.
No, we're talking about a quotation mark pig.
Right.
But do you know why it's called pig iron, Fletcher?
No.
I looked this up to look at it, and it's really sort of interesting. In the old days, iron was formed, was cast into sand. And you basically had like kind of a river running down into the sand. And then you had like little mini rivers forming on each side, like 10 on each side of the main river of like where you'd form the ingots. So basically the big river in effect is the mom. And those little ingots at the side are the baby pigs all in a row, feeding off of the main sort of source of the pig, of the iron, literally like sucking pigs.
Do you remember, I've got, Ross, why do we know that? Because I know this. Did we learn this as little kids somewhere in New Jersey?
I don't know, Kathy, because I first said I didn't realize this, but then I realized, like, I was, like, very familiar with the idea of
pig
iron.
Yeah, me too. I'm sorry. I totally. No idea. Was it when we were going to, like, a Von Steuben house or something? I don't know.
I don't know, but it did seem familiar to me. It also seemed, like, vital to know about pig iron.
Right,
I have no idea why.
I'm glad you have the same memory, because I don't know why, but I'm like, well, yeah, duh, of course.
I know.
Pig
and I was like,
iron.
The pig iron sand beds, the whole thing. I thought, this is really important stuff. And they didn't even make it the same way anymore, but whatever.
Well, apparently in our public school education, we both learned the same thing.
Yeah. So each summer, as you were on the beach on Tybee Island, you were trying to remember your times tables and remembering everything you could about pig iron.
It's a rich life, Fletcher. It's a very rich life.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas, by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torrin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. You can find all of our past episodes by subscribing to the You're Saying It Wrong podcast wherever you get your podcasts, or by visiting us at kmuw.org. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, if you'd like to suggest a topic, or you just want to reach out, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can also email us a voice memo of you asking it your question. You might get your voice heard on air. If you'd like to do the same thing by downloading the KMUW app, you can do that and just click the Talk to Us button. You can find all of Kathy and Ross's books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
New from The Embedded podcast. Female athletes have always needed grit and talent. But for decades, they've also needed a certificate.
There was chit-chat about, is that really a woman?
And even now, they're still being checked and questioned. Their story is the newest series from CBC and NPR's Embedded. It's called Tested. Listen wherever you get your podcasts.